Here we go. Welcome to episode 5 of the First Hour Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Eastwood, and radioing in from under a cardboard box is the founder of firsthour.net, Greg Noe.
Hey, Paul.
To get this out of the way, due to some technical difficulties, we have no episode 4, but today we have a couple of special guests who will be popping in later to talk about various topics. The main thing I want to talk about is Nintendo's announcement, air quotes, announcement, about the 3DS, the successor to the DS.
I still have to, you know, they have to convince me that they're going to be doing 3D in a way that's actually useful and fun to play.
Yeah, at first I had the same kind of 3D is a gimmick and that kind of thing, but the more I thought about it, first of all, they're doing it without glasses, and there's only a couple ways you can really do that. I mean, I don't know, maybe they've invented a new way. If so, then it might be really impressive. But a couple of the ways, you know, that we looked at was one of the games on the DSi uses the camera for eye tracking. You know, it's just moving the in-game camera based on where your eyes are to adjust the perspective, and then the iPhone has an app or two that uses the tilt sensor, which doesn't work quite as well, and it does the same thing, it just uses the tilt sensor to adjust the in-game camera. So what you end up with is not the eye-popping 3D effects that you get in the theater, where it's kind of coming off the screen, but you get more of a, like you're looking into a box, like a diorama, and you can look around things just by tilting your head. And that's what the DSi can currently do. And so I'm kind of assuming that's what they're getting at with this, because it doesn't require glasses.
Right, but that doesn't really seem like 3D to me. I mean, it's just fake 3D. I mean, it's all fake 3D, but...
Exactly, it's all fake. I mean, you know, what you see in the theater is just stereo vision. It's, in a way, even more fake, because you can't look around things. It's just, it's an illusion of depth perception.
Right. So, I don't know, I mean... I really hope they have something new and cool, but why would they release a brand new system when the DSi can do this already?
Yeah, and I had a couple thoughts on that too, because first of all, before this announcement, there had been a lot of teasing from Satoru Iwata about somebody had asked him about the next DS, and they had said, they had given kind of a list of things that they would want to see from the next DS, and they said like tilt sensor. I think they said rumble capability, and they said, like, a better graphics. Well,
that was rumored, and, it's the obvious step to take. I mean, if you want to compete with the iPhone, I mean, you need to have those features.
But either way, whether it has those or not, if this is just, like you said, the DSi can already do that trick. So if that's all this brings to the table, I don't think that's really legitimate. But they announced it as a successor to the DS, not just the next model of the DS. So I wonder if this isn't going to be like a significant bump in hardware, possibly in, you know, more buttons or different configuration or something like that, and that the 3D possibly is just the buzzword that they're latching on to make the announcement.
Yeah, that may be what they're trying to do. I don't know. I mean, how can they distinguish the 3DS so much that it's not just another DSi iteration where no one feels like it's necessary to upgrade?
Well, I mean, for example, the press release where this information came from said it would be capable of playing DS and DSi games. Well, if that's... Okay, say like the Game Boy Advance was a step up from the Color. It wasn't just a new model of the Color, of the Game Boy Color. It was the successor to the Game Boy Color, and it could play Game Boy Color games, but you would never say, oh, well, there's no need to buy a Game Boy Advance if you already have a Game Boy Color.
Right.
It was significantly different. So if that's what they do here, and they incorporate the rumored NVIDIA chipset that can push GameCube quality graphics, and, you know, and they have the tilt sensor, and they have this camera-based 3D or whatever, it's just one of the features, then it would be a significant improvement and a legitimate purchase for owners of a DSi.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm still rocking my old DS, and I think that this is going to take me a lot of convincing. I think the original DS started at what price point? Maybe 130 or 150?
It was 150, I believe, when it first came out.
It seems like it'd be tough for something like this with all these innards to start at that price again.
Yeah, this is, I mean...
It seems like it would have to be priced at $200.
The speculation would have it around something like that, more like a PSP than Nintendo's more, inexpensive offerings that they tend to like to lean toward with the Wii and the DS, but I don't know.
I guess we'll find out in a couple months at E3, and
yeah,
we'll get to see it.
And it's supposed to be hands-on there, I think, so those of us who are lucky enough to go to E3 can feel it, I guess.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they do the 3D, if it can actually be picked up by the cameras. You know, like the DSi faking the 3D obviously can.
Yep.
But you can't do like the, what is it, stereoscopic
right.
or whatever. I mean, the camera can't see that, so.
Yep.
I really think it's going to have to be more like the DSi, but maybe with the tilt and the camera to support it, we'll see. But
yeah. I also saw some analysts said they thought that Nintendo was trying to compete against the iPhone and stuff, and that the iPhone was actually taking away casual gamers from the DS, which you'd have to prove that to me, because the DS has sold like 150 million, and so it's like everybody already owns one. How much does the iPhone cost? You know, it's what, $300 plus a monthly fee?
A base iPod Touch is $200.
Okay, so an iPod Touch, right, $200. I mean, there you go. If Nintendo's trying to enter the same game, you know, and of course Apple has a whole different thing going on there with their ability to get people to pay for things. But, you know, if they shoot for $200 also, I don't know, how would they be able to compete with the iPod Touch plus more features at the same price? I don't know, it seemed like it would be even more expensive.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
But, I mean, Apple has the App Store going for it and everything. It just, I don't know, maybe they're not trying to compete directly, and this is just really the next evolution of portable gaming that they see.
Yeah, so that's possible.
Nintendo didn't really respond that directly to the PSP.
No, they didn't.
The Lite came out quickly, but the DSi took years, and I mean, it wasn't like a huge step up to compete with the PSP. So, I mean, maybe they don't see it as a competitor, whether that's, you know, intelligent or not.
Right. Well, so far I don't think the PSP has been a competitor, but...
Right.
I always remember.
I guess what I meant, whether they see Apple as a competitor.
Oh, okay, okay,
so,
yeah.
Which I would hope they do, but you know, maybe they can live happily together.
Well,
so
if you look at the DS Lite and how they redesigned the DS after such a short time and basically made it look like an Apple product.
Oh, sure.
It went from looking like a Nintendo product. Like, video game systems used to have this look to them that was kind of ugly, but it's what you wanted from a video game system, and the DS was like that, but then suddenly it was like, wait, people are carrying this around, they want it to look good, and they made it look like pretty much like an iPod at the time, the white glossy plastic.
Right.
So I don't know, I mean
plus the PSP has always been pretty appealing, I think, so
yeah.
Do we even know if it still has two screens? I mean, I guess it has to if it's backwards compatible.
Yeah, that's what I'm assuming, that because it's backwards compatible, it's going to have everything the DSi has. I mean, it has to have two screens, a touch screen, at least as many buttons, and two cameras, I guess, and a microphone.
It's going to be a lot of stuff if they're going to add
anything
motion sensor.
Else, yeah.
And...
But hey, I mean, you know, every time they add a feature... See, and this hadn't happened until the DS... Before, it was always just buttons, you know, you just press more buttons, but every feature they add is one more way that can be taken advantage of in a game, and yes, it's one more gimmick that can be added to a minigame collection, but it's also one more feature that can be legitimately added to a good game. Same lines of the 3DS, what do you think about the next generation of systems? You know, they haven't announced anything, and it doesn't seem like they should be, but if you look back, we're coming up on 5 years. That used to be what they tried to aim for, a new system every 5 years.
Well, I think that, I mean, they're actually sensitive to the economy now, and gamers aren't ready to shell out $300. They want us to shell out $100 for Natal or Move.
Yep.
Or, you know, whatever Nintendo's got going. Well, actually, it's just Wii Motion Plus and balance boards and, you know, accessory after accessory for Nintendo. So, you know, I guess I don't really mind that.
I like it. I mean, I was annoyed when the GameCube came out because I got my N64 kind of late. A year later, the GameCube comes out or something. I don't remember how long it was, but it was too soon. And I was like, well, great, now they're not going to make any more games for the system that I just bought. But I know when Sony, you know, announced the PS3, they were shooting for a 10-year lifespan instead of a 5-year lifespan. And that they were putting more hardware in it, you know, a better specs so that it would last longer. And that's, you know, why it cost $700 to begin with. And then, of course, they realized that nobody actually wants to buy something, a video game system for $700. Okay, so the PS2 came out in, what, 2000? Late 2000?
Yep, October, I think.
And then the PS3 came out in 2006, November of 2006, yep. Or October of 2006. So that was 6 years there. So I guess by those, you know, they would have a couple more years by that schedule. But, you know, the PS3 has just gotten started.
Right, it definitely feels like that.
Yeah, like, basically, from the time the Slim came out, I would say it seems like, okay, finally they entered the game, you know? Like, it's now at a price point that people will actually pay for a video game system. There's enough games on it be worth buying, and since then, a lot more games have started, you know, coming out on it.
Yeah, from someone who doesn't actually own a PS3, I mean, it's finally gotten to the point where I actually want a handful of games on it.
Yep.
You know, I want to play, so...
Yep. The Xbox 360, I mean, it's been out since sometime in 2005, so it's, you know, it's coming up on 5 years already. The original Xbox was only 4 years old when the Xbox 360 came out. But, you know, the Xbox 360 is still going strong. And I think a big part of it, the game has really changed because they've gotten to the point where, like, graphically and, you know, as far as the hardware goes, they can basically do anything they need to do with a game. I mean, sure, you could have better hardware, and then maybe you could push a few more polygons or some higher res textures or whatever, but that's not really what's making the difference in games anymore. Most games aren't pushing the hardware to their limits anyway. So what you need, you've got to have other things besides processing power, and that's what the Move and Natal is about. Which is kind of interesting that Nintendo recognized that already, but they also seem to not recognize that you did need some level of graphical prowess in order to make a game that people wanted to buy.
Yeah, I would definitely agree that, you know, they could have put a little more hardware into it. You know, I mean, they wouldn't have made as much money then, and that's, you know...
No, they wouldn't have.
You know, that's what they're going for. I mean, they're a corporation at heart, so...
Exactly. If you look at it from a business standpoint, Nintendo made the best decision of all of them because they proved that it's not really what the most people care about, you know, graphics isn't, and they sold a lot more Wiis than, of course, for them, they were actually profiting off of each Wii sold. Sony is still losing money off of each PS3 sold, so to Sony, the more PS3s they sell, the more money they lose, I mean, directly, they, you know, obviously they want to turn around and sell the games, and that's where they make their money, but, you know, I mean, if the Wii is two GameCubes duct taped together, then games should look twice as good as games on the GameCube did, but most of the Wii games don't look as good as the best GameCube games did.
No, I mean, I just finished Super Mario Galaxy, and I honestly thought that was a gorgeous-looking game.
Yeah.
I don't know, if I hadn't known it was a Mario game or, you know, whatever, a Nintendo IP, I mean, I would have guessed it was on the 360 or something.
You know, Nintendo has always been better at pushing their systems and getting the most out of it than third parties were. You know, they're kind of famous for that since the N64 era of being unfriendly to third-party developers, but...
Definitely.
But not, you know... Third-party games haven't sold well on the Wii, and although it's just kind of strange because the DS is, you know, there aren't that many first-party games on the DS. It's mostly third-party, and they sell pretty well, but then again, I guess the DS is kind of more like the Super Nintendo, so.
Yeah, they definitely changed their attitude.
Yep.
Since mid-90s.
Now I'm here with Paul Abamandi, a freelance writer who contributes to The First Hour in his spare time. He's with us to talk about one of Nintendo's biggest phenomena. Which Pokemon do you have?
I bought Heart Gold, but there's no reason for that. I just picked that one.
So you said this is the first Pokemon game you've played?
Yeah, I've never picked up any other one before. I've always been, you know, drawn to the appeal of it, but this was the first one.
So, any idea why, like, what kept you from the previous ones, or?
I guess I dismissed them as kind of kiddish.
Yeah.
But, you know, just from the graphics and then the whole animated TV show
right.
kind of kicked me off.
Yeah.
You know, I'd come home from after high school back then, and it'd be on, and I'd be like, no.
Yeah, it's not one of the best anime shows. Yeah, I felt the same way for a long time. I always thought, I knew it from the cartoon, like you say, and it just seemed like not a game that I really wanted to play, but I ended up picking up Blue and Gold at a garage sale, and I started playing through Blue, and it was like, this is actually a good game. It's really fun.
And those two were on the Game Boy Advance?
Yeah, well, see, Red and Blue were the first two, and then Gold and Silver were the, like, sequels, but they were all on the Game Boy, yeah.
Okay.
I've played the beginning of Gold, but not very much of it, so, which, of course, Heart Gold is the remake of. So, I mean, they're doing well for you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess one of the main reasons that I took the dive was I saw, you know, a bunch of more adult gamers constantly talking about the great addictive gameplay, and right from the get-go, I've only put in about 8 hours, and I haven't gotten really anywhere. I've just been grinding a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're working their magic. I'm having a lot of fun with them.
Yeah. How does it compare to other DS games you've played? Like, since you haven't played any previous Pokemon games, but as far as just a good DS game,
you know, it's not too bad. It's not the world's best graphics. And
okay.
Supposedly, there's going to be touchscreen minigames, but I haven't gotten there yet.
Okay.
So those will be the new additions, I'm guessing, to the game. That'll be interesting to see because, you know, touchscreen minigames, generally, there's only so much you can do.
Right.
It seems like, you know, if you've played one minigame, you played them all. Yeah, but, you know, they don't really mix them up too much. But otherwise, you know, you can use the touchscreen or you can use the D-pad.
Okay.
And it's a pretty good game. Yeah.
Good. I don't know. I kind of prefer when they just kind of leave the touchscreen out on games like that. Maybe let the option to move him with the touchscreen, but kind of just keep the touchscreen minigames out.
Yeah.
Have you played Chinatown Wars, Grand Theft Auto Chinatown Wars?
I haven't. Okay. So it looks interesting.
Like, the driving is really good in the running, but then there's, like, touchscreen minigames to hijack cars or to carjack cars, and it's just like, skip this. Like, why did you have to put this in there? Just let me jack the car without switching to the stylus.
You just used to be able to do it by hitting one button.
Right, and now it's like the rest of the game is controlled by the buttons, and then suddenly you have to, like, keep the stylus in between your fingers, ready to jack the car at any time. I mean, whenever you need it, you know. And then also the menu, it's like some of it is navigable by the buttons, but some of it's only with the stylus or with the touchscreen.
That's annoying.
Yeah, it was kind of annoying, so.
Yeah, and you can say the same thing about Heart Gold. Like, it's quicker to pick, when you're in a battle, to pick your options with the stylus.
Right.
But then you got to put it away when you're walking around.
Right.
And you got to put it back out. And if you're walking through tall grass, you're getting into a battle.
Right.
Every 15 seconds, you know.
Yep.
So I would have liked to actually have no touchscreen at all, like you said.
Yeah. Especially for a remake, it's like, the original didn't have it, why does this one need it?
Right. It's just another thing to put on the back of the box,
maybe.
But
if only it were, like, optional or something.
Yeah, like, if you could actually remove it somehow from the option, you know, that would be nice.
No, just no touchscreen whatsoever. When the touchscreen on my old DS broke, I was looking for games that did not use the touchscreen at all. And then you'd come across, I think it was Final Fantasy IV, for the DS, I was like, oh, this one won't use the touchscreen, right? Because it was originally on the Super NES. And for the most part, it doesn't. But then there's, like, this one thing that you can do to level up one of your character's weapons or specials or something that requires the touchscreen. And that's like, the only thing they put in there. And I was like, great. Like, I can't level up this character's attack at all.
You're out of luck.
Yeah. But, I mean, obviously, you know, a big appeal of the DS is the touchscreen, and a lot of games make very good use of it.
Oh, sure.
So, kind of.
I think, like you said, for remakes, you know, if it wasn't there in the beginning, chances are it doesn't need to be there now.
Yeah.
I mean, the graphics overhaul is nice. It's not the best, but it's nice.
Okay.
And that should have been, like, where the remake kind of left off, I guess.
Just, yeah, graphically. And of course, the Pokewalker.
Yeah. You know what? I really like it.
Really?
Yeah. I got the game Sunday, so I've only had it a few days.
Okay.
And I have a day job where I sit in an office. Now, online, I read that it says daily you should take about 10,000 steps.
Okay.
And on average, I took about 3,000. So I don't really do much. I sit behind a computer.
Yeah. Well.
But what's nice is, you know, you take 1,000 steps. I think that's what it is. And your Pokemon, who's in the Pokewalker, levels up.
Okay.
So it's a nice way to play the game and not play it.
Yeah.
And then there's other mini things you can do. You can find Pokemon within the Pokewalker that aren't in the game. You know, it's simple. It's fun. You're not going to do it for every Pokemon. You're not going to, you know, take them back and forth and back and forth. But
right.
For right now, it works.
I thought it was weird when they first mentioned it. Like, what are they trying to get at here? But so apparently the ROM was leaked a couple of days before it came out. So people were downloading the ROM. And in this particular forum, this guy said, is there any way I can buy a Pokewalker separately from the game because I have the ROM, but I want to be able to use the Pokewalker? And strangely, nobody said this, but I was like, yes. And guess what? It even comes with a free copy of the game, you know? And it's like, it's like kind of an anti-piracy measure without using DRM, but it's like they pack something else in there that's just a nifty little bonus that you don't get if you download the ROM.
I'm pretty surprised at how easy it is to, like, take one Pokemon from your DS cart and put it on the Pokewalker.
Yeah.
Because it uses, like, an infrared, like, beaming system. And it's pretty easy. It works great, though.
It's like, so the IR is, like, built into the game card or something like that? Is that?
Yeah, I think that's what it is, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. It's very, you know, Japan.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how else to say
it. Well, apparently there's, like, a fitness training game or something that uses the same thing, like infrared transmitter to a pedometer. Yeah, I was trying to think not to a Pokewalker, but what's the real word for that thing? Yeah, to a pedometer. You download that to the game for some reason. Doesn't seem nearly as cool as downloading Pokemon, but anyway.
I'm looking forward to the weekend when I can actually like walk around a little more and see just how much I can accumulate.
Do you read Penny Arcade's comic?
I do.
Okay. Do you see the one about him sticking the Pokewalker on his kid and making him run around the park?
Yeah, and I saw someone online posted a picture. They stuck it to their cat's belt or necklace, whatever it is. Yeah. There's ways you can cheat it, I'm sure.
Well, I think it was on Joystick. They showed somebody built like this Kinex robot that just stood there shaking it.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
It's like, okay, that's getting pretty... I guess it's like the people who built a robot to play Guitar Hero.
Yeah, I don't get those kind of people, and, you know, I'm enjoying it, even if I'm not using it to its full potential and, you know, getting every single Pokemon. I'm just going to, you know, take it with me when I go for a walk, and, you know, I don't need to cheat my way through.
Right. But I think it's also really cool because, you know, handheld games are played differently than console games, obviously. You usually don't sit down and have marathon gaming sessions with a DS.
No.
Your hands would cramp up. So I think it's neat when they can throw in little things like that where you can keep going in the game without having to sit there with holding the DS.
Oh, sure. So, sure.
The game I was using an example for that is The World Ends With You, where you gain experience points for your items when you save and turn it off. So, like, when you turn it back on, it calculates the amount of time it's been since you've last played, and it gives you experience points for that. And so, it's really cool because it's like it's rewarding you for not playing, kind of. You're still playing even when you're not playing, basically.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us, Paul. You can follow Paul on Twitter, username Pabba, P-A-B-B-A. Thornton. Mike, it's good to have you back on the show.
Pretty good to be back.
Mike's here to talk to us about the latest installment in one of the best-selling series in video game history. Mike, you've been playing Final Fantasy XIII, haven't you?
Yes, and best-selling series, and I think this is one of the best in the series. The game is by far one of my favorite Final Fantasies I think I've played in a long time. One of my favorite Japanese RPGs I've played in a long time, and I'm about 22 hours in. I think it's around 50 hours average. I don't know if you know anything about it, but in the press conference when they were talking about the game before release, it was going to have two different worlds. There's a world called Cocoon, mm-hmm. and then there's a world called Grand Pulse.
Right.
So in the first half of the game, Cocoon is very linear. It's very story-driven world. And then when you get into Grand Pulse, that's where the open-ended free-roaming adventure comes into play.
Okay.
So I'm almost to the free-roaming section of the game.
Okay.
And it's about, you know, like I said, I'm 20 hours in, and, you know, I've heard people complain about the linearity, and I've read some reviews on, you know, what everybody thinks about it, and as a veteran RPG-er, you know, it would be me as one of the persons saying, this is too easy, this is too linear, but it's really not that way. I mean, the game is challenging, I've died several times, even in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a lot more challenging than any other Final Fantasy game out there.
Wow.
The battle system's really, really, really good. Takes a lot of strategy. They slowly work your way up.
Mm-hmm.
If a new person came into this game, they'd be completely lost. So I kind of see why they hold you on the leash a little bit.
Okay.
Basically, it's like setting up a deck with different roles, like a tank, your mages, your rogues, and then you have your healers, as always, and you have buffers and debuffers. You know, buffers add spells
right.
like protect, and then the debuffers do things like slow. In the beginning, the game's linear, and certain characters only have certain jobs.
Okay.
Like, for example, the main character, Lightning, she can only be a Ravager or a Commando, which is similar, but they have this thing called the Chain Gauge.
Mm-hmm.
The Commandos basically help build up the Chain Gauge.
Okay.
So there's two sections of damage dealers. The Ravagers, they fill it up faster, but it doesn't stay as long. The gauge goes down faster. But if you're a commando, you don't fill it up as fast, so you kind of have to alternate between going commando and going commando.
Right.
Going, You got to alternate between going commando and going Ravager.
Okay.
So it's kind of a risk-reward system. It's just really challenging, and it's the battle system's action-packed. I don't know if have you heard anything about how you can only control one of the three party members?
Yeah. So is that kind of like Final Fantasy XII, where you just kind of set the other people to do something and then you control one, or?
You can't. You basically give them a general role.
Okay.
Like, I don't know if you know about XII and, like, the Gambit system.
Right.
But on that, you could characterize individual things you wanted your character to do. Like, if the enemy falls below 40%, cast some kind of Fire 2 or whatever.
Sure.
All you do is pick a role. You want your ally to be a medic. All he's going to do is cast the most efficient heal spells.
Okay.
So the AI is really smart. They're not dumb. They don't get in your way.
Okay.
If you scan the enemy,
mm-hmm.
and you can scan the enemy to see its weaknesses or strategies against it, and they will use spells that it's weak against.
Oh, cool.
You don't have to tell them he's weak against ice.
Right.
Only use ice. They'll only use the most effective options.
Okay, so it's kind of like the Gambit system, except the AI is figuring it out for themselves instead of you having to tell them.
Right.
Okay.
No, there's no setting gambits. So, you know, you can only control that one character, but the battle is so lightning fast that there's no way you could control three of them.
That's what it looked like in the videos I saw. It's like you couldn't have controlled all three of them because your one character was attacking so quickly, you didn't have time to do anything else, really.
You constantly are switching roles between, you know, once you debuff the enemy, once you get your health up, you're going to switch back over to full-out damage, and then they...
So you can change that during the battle, not just
instantly.
Before. Do you have to do that, open a menu or something, or is there like...
On the PlayStation, they have it hot-cued to the L1 button.
Okay.
But, you know, when you play, it's if you stay the same role, you're not going to get very far. You have to constantly switch.
Okay.
You can have six setups.
Okay.
So that's six things of customizing your three characters on what roles they're going to
okay.
be. So it, there's a lot of strategy.
Yeah, sounds like it.
You know, there's no magic points.
Okay.
After every battle, your health is instantly regenerated back to full. And if you die, you start right back before you encounter the enemy. So
it's more about like the tactics of the individual battles than the overall strategy of getting through a dungeon or something like that.
Right. Each battle is, it's like a boss.
Okay.
Like, they do have big bosses and, you know, all that good stuff. But each battle, you don't feel like you're just wasting time. You're not just pressing A to get through a dungeon.
Okay.
Each battle, you usually have to pay attention. And one thing I don't like about, if your main character dies, the game is over.
Oh, okay. So it's not the whole party down thing.
No. Your two party members with you can die. But if the character you're controlling dies, it's game over. But since you start right back before you encountered the enemy, it's not that big a deal, so I didn't mind it. And I've kind of thought this through on, do I not like how it is, the game over system? You know, it's not much of a risk if, you
yeah,
know.
You just start the battle again.
Right. I never save in this game. I just keep going.
Yeah, cause...
I was contemplating, and I think, you know, a lot of first-person shooters and Halo and Uncharted 2, they use a checkpoint system.
Right.
So the game's really challenging, and you'll die often.
Yeah.
But you're only pulled back a few steps,
yep.
and you can, you know, repeat the process. And I think I really like that system.
Okay.
I really like the checkpoint system because it allows the games to be really challenging. I mean, you got to be on your toes, but, you know, it's not a 30-minute struggle. If you would just lose the will to continue on with the game and would finish it. I think I really like that.
You know,
system.
That kind of actually goes back to old, like, NES games where, like, Mario Brothers, where when you died, you'd go back to the beginning of the level, but a level really was only a couple of minutes long. Games would get bigger and bigger, and dying meant you had to replay, like you said, half an hour of the game or something like that. Or, whereas those old school games, like, they were really hard, and you died over and over, and you had to try again and again, but it really only took a couple minutes to beat a level, so it wasn't that big of a deal.
Right. The side-scroller game I was playing, Boy and His Blob, the remake on Wii, does the same thing. It's one of the hardest games I've ever played. But it's not that frustrating because, you know, you don't lose much when you die. But it's still challenging to navigate through those 2D levels, which I really love.
Have you played Braid?
I did play, like, the first two levels
of it. Okay, well, you can't die on there because you rewind time anytime he's going to die. Like, he'll get hit, and then he'll fall off the bottom of the screen, and then it'll just, like, freeze it and say, press the button to rewind time, and you do, and then it's done. And so it seems like, wait, you can't die, so what's the point? Why are you even trying to avoid the enemies or whatever? But they've made the game hard in other ways to where whether or not you can die is not really the point at all. So it's still pretty difficult to solve some of the puzzles and make some of the jumps and stuff, even though death doesn't matter. And it keeps it from being frustrating because you don't have to restart the level every time you make a wrong button press or something.
Yeah. Nowadays, when I play some of those old games on, like, the Virtual Console or something, and, you know, you got to start back even, like, 5 minutes, 10 minutes before, I just don't have the time. And usually I just lose morale on that. So I'm kind of glad they're moving this way. It seems to be evolving in a sense. Like I said, the game's really good. I recommend anybody who's a fan to pick it up. I know it's had some controversy, but, you know, I don't know if you played any of the Final Fantasies, but in nature, they've always been very, very linear. I mean, like, Final Fantasy X, it didn't even have a world map. You know, it looks like you have this open world, but it's always been very, very linear.
That's what I kind of wondered when I heard the reviews when they were complaining about it being linear, and I said, what Final Fantasy game really hasn't been? They might give you the illusion that you can do whatever you want, but you actually can't. You can only do the next thing on the list, basically. And just because this time, you know, the map might actually look like a line instead of an open world, it's not actually any different as far as gameplay.
Right. Yeah, and maybe they should even take off that map, because I doubt people would be complaining as much if they didn't see that map there and see how
I did hear one reviewer say that, like, he said when you're actually playing it, it doesn't come across nearly as much, but when you see the map, it's like, wow, I just ran in a straight line all the way through this dungeon.
And it's just like every other Final Fantasy, there's small branches where you can get treasure chests and whatnot. I mean, it's the same dungeon layout as any other Final Fantasy I've seen. And what they in the press conference, they said they made it like that because they wanted to just hit you with story repeatedly. Yeah. Like if you had time to, you know, stop at a town and you're just walking around talking to villagers, you can't move that story.
Forget what's going on.
But if you're constantly on the move like that, the story's just being pushed to you over and over. And I really couldn't put it down. I just wanted to keep playing. And you know, most Japanese RPGs I can only play for like an hour, and then I'm like, well, okay, this is a stopping point.
Right.
You know, this is a rest area. You know, I just beat the boss of that dungeon. Let's put it down. But this game, it just, you know, oh, what's going to happen to him? They did a real good job on characters and story development. It's really one of my favorite stories in Final Fantasy.
I know sometimes I just want a game just to sit down and like press buttons and see stuff happen, but then sometimes I want a game that just tells a good story, and I think that's, you know, they were leaning very heavily on that. Like you said, they wanted the story to just keep coming at you and keep progressing. It keeps the director of the game and the developer more in control of where the story's going. You know, like you said, it keeps you going instead of stopping when you get to a town or whatever and saying, this is a stopping point, or just taking time to chill and forgetting the story for a while or whatever.
Another point is, it's kind of like Metal Gear Solid 4, like the story. You know how you can just sit back and watch the cutscenes like that? The cutscenes are not like 30 minutes long like that. They're broken up in like 5-minute intervals where, you know, it'll have a cutscene, then you can run. But I really love Japanese storytelling. I mean, I know the characters can be cheesy. I know they're cheesy in Metal Gear, and, you know, they just say some silly stuff in the voice acting. Final Fantasy is the same way. I mean, they got some cheesy characters, but I don't know. They just pull off drama so well, and the music, everything, it's pulled off really, really well and tells a really, really good story.
Cool. All right. Thanks for being on the show and for all the lowdown on Final Fantasy. And if all goes to plan, we'll hear from you again soon.
Indeed.
Yep.
All right. Thanks. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the First Hour podcast. FirstHour.net now updates 5 times a week, Monday through Friday. Questions, comments, or suggestions or whatever for the podcast, you can email podcast@firsthour.net. You can follow either of us on Twitter. Greg is First Hour, and you can follow me at Paul Eastwood. That's episode 5 of the First Hour podcast. Flubber Mountain by Maze Dude, courtesy of Pussy Remix.